to start a different kind. This is my favorite kind of preaching. It's called expository teaching. And instead of picking a topic and going through and seeing what the Bible says, you actually go through the Bible and go verse by verse and explain the Bible. And this is my favorite kind of preaching to do. And so today we're going to start in the book of Exodus. And the reason we're doing that is because Exodus will lead us up to Easter and why we celebrate Easter and what it's all about and how we got to that point, how Jesus had to end up on the cross. And it all starts back in the book of Exodus. The first book of the Bible, Genesis, closes with one of the best stories in the Bible. If you haven't read it, you need to go back and read it. It's the story of Joseph and how God used Joseph to save the entire world. The story of Joseph actually takes up more space in the book of Genesis than the story of Abraham does. And it's a fascinating story. Long story short, Joseph ends up in Egypt, and he becomes second in command to the Pharaoh there. And he explains a dream the Pharaoh had. And he tells Pharaoh, here's what the dream is. You're going to have 7 years where everything's going to be great, and there's going to be food to feed the whole world, and then you're going to have 7 years of famine. And Joseph says, here's what you should do. You should take somebody and put them over those 7 good years and have them store up a bunch of grain so when those 7 years of famine come, you, Pharaoh, can feed the whole world and get rich in the process. And so this is how Genesis comes to a close. Joseph asked to move his whole family to Egypt. His family consisted of about 70 people at this time. And God had granted him so much favor in Pharaoh's eyes that Pharaoh said, yeah, don't just bring him, put him down here in Goshen. Now, Goshen was on the Nile River. You guys can picture Egypt. It's just a big desert, right, except by the Nile Delta. It's fertile farmland. And that's where the Israelites were allowed to settle. That's how much favor he had. So the book of Genesis closes with Joseph's family living in the finest land in Egypt. The book of Exodus opens sometime later. It opens by giving the 12 sons of Joseph. The 12 sons of Joseph will become the 12 tribes of Israel. The number of relatives of Joseph's now living in Egypt is 70. Verse 6 just begins to hint at the trouble that's about to come, though. Exodus 1:6. Now Joseph and all his brothers and all that generation died. So it starts to hint at the trouble to come here. Just a simple verse. The next verse seems to soften that verse a little bit. You go to the next one, Zach 1:7. But the sons of Israel were fruitful and increased greatly and multiplied and became exceedingly mighty so that the land was filled with them. Now this has become a problem for the Egyptians. They're growing as a nation at a rapid pace. So everything's going great. God had promised Abraham that your descendants are going to be as the sand on the seashore, and that's what's happening here while they're living in Egypt. They're growing and multiplying and multiplying. But there's two problems lurking here. Only one of them is mentioned in Scripture, but the other one is certainly present, and we'll get to that. Not this week, but we'll get to it. So trouble arises. Exodus 1:8. Now there arose a new king over Egypt, who did not know Joseph. So Joseph's generation has died out, and a new Pharaoh has come to power. If this was a movie, when this verse came up, the music would get dark and foreboding. And that's what's going on here. So they've all died out. Between verses 7 and verse 8, about 400 years have gone by in between those two verses. By the way, the word arose here actually translates as rose against. So a new king rose against the descendants of Joseph. And this time the number of Hebrews living in Egypt has grown from 70 to 603,000 males, 20 years of age to about 40 years of age, who could fight in the army. John MacArthur puts a total number of Israelis now living in Egypt at about 2 million. You can see the problem growing for both countries. This leads to a serious problem for the Egyptians, but it leads to a serious problem for God too, believe it or not. And we'll get to that. As we move into the plagues in a few weeks, we're going to see that the plagues were not just directed at the Egyptians and the Egyptian gods, which they were. They bore the brunt of the devastation that came. But they were also directed at God's own people. And we're going to see why and how and why God had to do that. The new Pharaoh looks at the Israelis, and he sees them growing, and he starts to get paranoid, and he thinks, there's just too many of these people, and they're just doing what they want in our country, just living free lives, just out minding their own business. And Pharaoh gets this paranoid idea that, you know, if somebody decides to attack us, the Hebrews will probably join their side and fight against us. Now, where he gets this idea, it's just paranoia that leaders come up with. So he comes up with a plan. He's going to make slaves out of the Hebrews, and he's going to give them quotas, and he's going to make them build so many things per day. The Egyptians put hard taskmasters over them who would beat them. And alongside the taskmasters, each of them had a scribe. And the scribe would come through, and they'd be over here, and they'd be over here. Let's see, Tim, you only got 36 bricks made today. Deb, you got 62, so Tim, you must be loafing. And wham, get on the ball, Tim. And this is what's going on with the Hebrews back here in the land of Egypt. It's not a fun time for the Israelis. So the Egyptians have the Hebrews start building cities. The first was called Pithon, which was a god of the Egyptians. He was a sun god. And the other was called Ramses. Now, the name Ramses causes some trouble for historians. It gives us a hard time to place when the Exodus actually took place. And the reason is because Egypt had two pharaohs named Ramses, Ramses I and Ramses II. And so people think, well, this must have been named after one of them, so the Exodus had to take place under that particular pharaoh, which isn't true. Ramses was also one of the gods of the Egyptians, and so the city was probably named for that god. The plan was to exhaust the Hebrews, drive them to total and complete exhaustion, so that they couldn't go in and have relations with their wives and have more kids, and the population would quit growing. This was the plan behind all this. Exodus 1:12. But the more they were oppressed, the more they multiplied, and the more they spread abroad. And the Egyptians were in dread of the people of Israel. They're absolutely terrified. They're saying that the more they oppress God's people, the more God's people grow and multiply, and God keeps blessing them. And so now they're absolutely terrified of these people. Exodus 1:13 and 14. So it gets worse for the Hebrews. So they ruthlessly made the people of Israel work as slaves and made their lives bitter with hard service and mortar and brick. What they had to do is they had to go out and they had to not just build bricks, now they have to go out and they have to find the materials to build the bricks. But Tim still has to make his 64 bricks every day. Now he has to go and get the materials. Before this, the Egyptians were giving them the materials and say, build. Now they're saying, you go get the materials and then build. And so things are getting worse. And in all kinds of work in the field, in all their work, they ruthlessly made them work as slaves. Ruthlessly, twice. They're driving these people hard. As the foreman watched over them, they're keeping the tallies and making sure they're keeping up. This was a bitter time for the Hebrews. And it's going to get worse. But God's about to send a deliverer. Pharaoh gives an order to the midwives of the Hebrews. Listen, midwives are just, today we would call them delivery room nurses, okay? They simply help with the birth process. So they gave the midwives, Pharaoh told them, listen, any of the Hebrew women that have a baby, if it's a boy, kill it. If it's a girl, you can let it live. But if it's a boy, you got to kill it. But the midwives feared God more than they feared Pharaoh. And so they came up with this story. May or may not be true, historians are divided on it, that Hebrew women, when they give birth, they would do it privately. They would just go into a back room and they would give birth without any assistance. And so this apparently satisfied Pharaoh because he didn't make a big fuss about it or anything. So the Bible, this is a funny thing about the Bible. You know, in all this, if you go back through Genesis and Exodus and all this, none of the names of the pharaohs are ever given. They're just the pharaoh. never given. But the names of the midwives are given, because God wants us to remember his people. The names of them were Shephira, how do you pronounce that? Shiphrah? And Puah. So these were the two midwives who preserved the Hebrew children. So because the midwives refused to kill the boys, Pharaoh comes up with another plan. Exodus 1:22. Then Pharaoh gave this order to all his people. Okay, before it was just the midwives. Now it's anybody that's an Egyptian. If you knew any Hebrew who gave birth to a baby boy, kill it. Then Pharaoh gave this order to all his people, throw every newborn Hebrew boy into the Nile River. But you can let the girls live. This should bring to mind an incident that happens later on. Jump ahead to Matthew 2:16. Herod was furious when he realized that the wise men had outwitted him. He sent soldiers to kill all the boys in and around Bethlehem who were 2 years old and under, based on the wise men's report of the star's first appearance. This, of course, is the Christmas story of King Herod. And the wise men were supposed to come back and tell Herod where Jesus was so that he could go and pay tribute to him. Of course, he wanted to kill him. So here we are, 1,500 years later, and Herod's doing the same thing that Pharaoh did, trying to stop God's lineage, trying to stop God's plan. Listen, you can never stop God's plan. Never. The schemes of man will never prevail. Nothing's changed over the millennium. Nothing has changed. Tyrant rulers will do anything to keep their power, including killing newborns. Sound familiar? At any rate, Exodus chapter 1 closes there. And chapter 2 opens with a Levite man and a Levite woman getting married and having a child. The child born to them is at least their second-born son. We're not told about the firstborn, but we know it has to be the second. The child born to them is, of course, Moses. But we know that he has a brother, Aaron, who's 3 years older than he is. Exodus chapter 7, verse 7. Moses was 80 years old and Aaron 83 when they spoke to Pharaoh. So we know that this isn't the first child born to this Levite couple. That the parents are both Levites comes into play later on, because from them, Aaron's born, and Aaron becomes the first Levitical priest of Israel. And from that time forward down through today, only Levitical priests can offer sacrifices on behalf of the children of Israel. So Moses' mom, her name is Jochebed, she either saw something special in this child, or like any mom, she just wanted to save the child's life. And so she comes up with a plan. She nurses Moses until he's about 3 months old, and then she gets a basket, and she covers it with tar and pitch, and that makes it waterproof. She's a keen observer of what's going on around her, and she knew when Pharaoh's daughter was going to come down to the water to bathe in the mornings. And so she just happened to lay baby Moses in the reeds at that spot. Between the order to kill the children and Moses being placed in that basket, see, the Bible glosses over this, doesn't even mention it. Thousands of Hebrew children are being murdered. This is not a good time. This was a desperate act by a desperate woman. The child's sister, she's probably about 8, 9, 10, somewhere in that age, Miriam, she stood back to observe what would happen to the baby Moses. Now, being a child, she could stay in there, and the princess comes down, Pharaoh's daughter, and she has all her attendants with her, and they come down to the water to bathe, and she's probably just standing back here, just minding her own business, just keeping an eye on things. And because she's a kid, they didn't pay any attention to her. They place Moses where he'll be found. Exodus 2:5, where he'll be found. Soon Pharaoh's daughter came down to bathe in the river, and her attendants walked along the riverbank. When the princess saw the basket among the reeds, she sent her maid to get it for her. This is God working behind the scenes. God already has all of the things planned out. 80 years from now, this is all going to play out. Okay, but for now, God has this all planned out, how this is going to happen. Not only is a child about to be saved, listen to this. Not only is a child about to be saved, he's about to become the grandson of the man who gave the order that all the boys were to be killed. It's amazing how God works. Exodus 2:7 shows the bravery must have been a part of the family upbringing of Moses. Exodus 2:7. Then his sister asked Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and get one of the Hebrew women to nurse the baby for you?" Now this is, let's say, Aaliyah here. Aaliyah coming up to the princess. Aaliyah's a slave. And she comes up to the princess and says, "You know, that's probably one of the Hebrew babies. You want me to go get a woman to nurse the baby for you?" Now see, Aaliyah could be put to death for dare talking to the princess. Slaves don't talk to royalty. But she took the chance, and because she's young, Pharaoh's daughter heeds her advice. So she goes and gets a Hebrew mom to nurse the baby. Now who do you think they get to nurse the baby? Jochebed, Moses' mom. So here it's come full circle. Jochebed has put Moses where he'll be found. Pharaoh's daughter finds Moses. Pharaoh's daughter needs somebody to nurse Moses. It just happens to pick Jochebed, Moses' mom. And then Exodus 2:10. Poor Zach, did I give you this, Zach? Oh, you're the man. I gave him this late last night. When the child grew older, she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. She named him Moses because she said, "I drew him out of the water." The name Moses in Hebrew means to draw out. The name Moses in Egyptian means son. She literally drew a son out of the water. Pharaoh's daughter then gets lost to history. We never hear from her again after that. She takes Moses to live in the royal court, and then she's gone from history. Did her dad, the Pharaoh, know that she adopted a Hebrew child? Did she ever get married? Did somebody help her raise Moses? We're not told any of those things. We simply jump from this episode to a grown Moses. Moses is out walking around one day, just minding his own business, as most of the people will do when God calls them and gets hold of them. Exodus 2:11. One day when Moses had grown up, he went out to his people and looked on their burdens, and he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his people. Now, this was an everyday occurrence. Remember, they're slaves, and the Egyptians are beating the Hebrews anyway. But this must have been a special circumstance. Maybe they were done for the day. Maybe they were off, away from the rest of the people. I don't know. But Moses' anger gets aroused at this point. Even though Moses had been raised, look at this, even though Moses had been raised in Pharaoh's courtyard as Pharaoh's grandson, he still identified himself as a Hebrew. He didn't lose his identity. What Moses does next shocks Christians, encourages believers, and proves that you can trust the Bible. Exodus 2:12. After looking in all directions to make sure no one was watching, Moses killed the Egyptian and hid the body in the sand. Easy to gloss over that verse, but here's what's going on. So Moses walks up on this Egyptian, and he's beating one of his fellow Hebrews. And Moses gets this idea in it. "I'm going to kill that Egyptian." And he starts looking around, making sure nobody can see him. And then he kills the Egyptian and he hides him in the sand. See, when Moses made that decision, this became premeditated murder. And he's looking around, making sure that nobody sees him do this. He thought he was alone, and he kills the Egyptian, and he hides him so that nobody will ever find him. This shocks Christians because we want our Bible heroes to be blameless, to be perfect people. And so there's no such thing as a perfect person. Never has been, never will be. Jesus was God, of course. It shows that it encourages believers because it shows that, listen, this story right here, this shows that no matter how far you've gone, no matter what you've done, no matter to what depths you have sunk, God is not finished with you. He could have said, I'm going to find somebody else, Moses. That's it. You blew it. But he didn't. Because God's a God of second chances and 100th chances and 10,000th chances. It vindicates the Bible. It proves the Bible. Because if you were going to write a book about a religion and you were going to make it up, you'd make all your Bible Hebrews perfect people. But the Bible shows the bad, the sin, the evil. And almost every character in the Bible has a dark side. They're people, just like we're people. Okay? They're normal. We like to make the people in the Bible bigger than life, but they're not. They're just people, just like us. So the next day, Moses is out walking again, just minding his own business, and trouble seems to have a way of finding Moses, and Moses comes across two Hebrews fighting. And so Moses is about to break this fight up. Exodus 2:14. This is one of the two Hebrews who's fighting. The man said, who made you ruler and judge over us? Moses is going to hear those words a lot in the next 40 years. He's going to hear it a lot. Are you thinking of killing me as you killed the Egyptian? Then Moses was afraid and thought, what I did must have become known. Listen, here's the thing with sin. We all think we're hiding it and we're doing it in secret, but somebody sees. Somebody knows. Okay? And that's what happened with Moses here. One such incident, later on, when the men asked Moses, who made you a judge and ruler over us? One incident later on, you're going to see that 250 men challenged Moses' rule. How do you know God called you? Maybe he called me to lead these people. And so God says, you get the people that are with you over here and the people that are with Moses over here, and about 250 people challenged Moses, and the earth opened up, dropped the men in, and covered them alive, just like that. Because they dared challenge God's prophet, Moses. That's in Numbers 16:32 and Numbers 26:10 if you want to read it. And here's where the waters get a little bit muddied. Exodus 2:15. When Pharaoh heard of it, that he had killed the Egyptian, he sought to kill Moses. But Moses fled from Pharaoh and stayed in the land of Midian. And he sat down by a well. Now this is one of those verses that you gloss over and it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot going on, but there's a lot of things going on here. Midian was one of Abraham's sons. Of course, from him will come the Midianites. For a long time, the Hebrews and the Midianites are friends, but eventually there's a split and it'll lead to thousands and thousands of people dying. Moses sat by a well. The reason he did this, see, Moses knew the history. And when Isaac was looking for a wife, Abraham sent his servants to go sit at the well and wait till the women came out to draw water. And the woman that came out to draw water was going to be Isaac's wife. Jacob went, when he was looking for a wife, went and sat by a well. And God told him, the woman that comes out to meet you, that's going to be your wife. And now Moses is here. Moses is sitting by the well, just kind of minding his own business. Exodus 2:16. Now the priests of Midian had seven daughters, and they came and drew water and filled the troughs to water their father's flock. The priest here is called by three different names in the Bible, all the same person. Okay, most often he's called Jethro. In these passages, he's going to be called Reuel. But they're all the same person. Picture, you know, there's no Bible contradictions. Picture Saul and Paul, same person. Okay, listen, God never changed Saul's name to Paul. We came up with that idea on our own. Saul was simply his Greek name, so when he was hanging out with the Greeks, they called him Saul. Paul was his Roman name, so when he was hanging out with the Romans, they called him Paul. Same person. Same thing here with Moses' father-in-law. That he's called a priest here shows that he's still following the practices that was laid out by Abraham, the ceremonies. Now note the lack of respect that's shown to women as we get into the next verse. Exodus 2:17. But some other shepherds came and chased them away. So Moses jumped up and rescued the girls from the shepherds. Then he drew water from the flocks. So the high priest's daughters, who is the most respected man in the culture, they come out and they're getting the water up, and they're doing all the work, and they bring all the work up, and they get the water out, and they're ready to feed their animals, and some guys come along and say, "Beat it, you women. We're going to feed our animals." And this is what's going on here in this verse. And so Moses, learning to be a servant here, jumps up and rescues the girls. Apparently he chased the shepherds away and allowed the seven daughters of the priest to feed their flocks. We tend to think that everyone in the Bible lives stress-free, perfect, nice lives, but it's not true. Exodus 2, 18 and 19. When they, the seven daughters, came home to their father, Reuel, Jethro, he said, "How is it you've come home so soon today?" They answered, "An Egyptian rescued us from the shepherds. He even drew water for us and watered the flock." This is Moses in action. Moses still has an identity crisis, as you could see. Even though he identifies himself as a Hebrew, the seven daughters say he's an Egyptian. This Egyptian guy came over here and helped us out. Listen, ever feel like you don't belong? Like you just don't fit in? Listen, Moses knew what that was like. So did Jesus. So Jethro will become Moses' father-in-law. Reuel, Jethro, sends his daughters back to the well and invites Moses home for dinner. And Moses and Jethro must have hit it off right away, because Moses is going to end up staying in the household for a while. Exodus 2:21. Moses accepted the invitation, and he settled there with him. In time, Reuel gave Moses his daughter Zipporah to be his wife. In time, Moses continued to live with his father-in-law. He became a shepherd. Just like David, he tended the flocks. Years will pass, and Pharaoh will die. But the misery of the Israeli people continues. God has heard his people moaning. You want to play? God has heard his people moaning. They're crying out for deliverance. It's been 430 years, and they've been slaves. Joseph is long dead. Moses is nowhere in the picture. Most of these people who are crying out to God, God's going to send a deliverer, but most of them will never see the promised land. Moses himself will never step foot in the promised land. But all that's 40 years down the road, 40 years in the future. A showdown is coming. It's going to be a clash for the ages. Moses is going to lie to God. God's going to get angry. The new Pharaoh is going to oppress the Hebrews more and more. Gods are going to clash. That's what the whole plague thing is about, the clash of the gods. Death and destruction are on the horizon. Bad times are coming. All of Egypt is going to mourn. All of Israel is going to rejoice. But that rejoicing is going to be short-lived, because Pharaoh is not a man to mess with, and God is not a God to mess with. The world's greatest army is going to meet the world's living God, and it's going to be the battle for the ages. There's going to be one winner. The future lies in the balance. And here's what this has to do with us. Is it going to be man's future, or is it going to be God's future that wins? And so we have to make that decision every day. Who's going to rule in my life? Is it going to be Brian, or is it going to be God? Because as we're going to see over the next few weeks, if Brian decides to make Brian God of his life, things are going to get really tough. Really tough. But we have to make that choice every day. We're going to see how choosing to make himself his own God, how that worked out for Pharaoh. not so well, as you'll see. Are we going to allow God to have his rightful place in our lives? My favorite group, which you guys wouldn't like, has a song called Theocracy. Theocracy is a form of government in which only God can rule. And they have these lyrics in this song. Battle cry to engage. For the war, set the stage. And armies march and kings arise. And the pain reflects in holy eyes. For the choice, the time has come. Will it be my will or God's be done? We have to make that decision every day. Is it going to be Brian's will? Is it going to be your will? Is it going to be God's will? Moses is now 80 years old. The first 40 years of his life were surreal. He's living as a prince, has the finest of everything in Pharaoh's household. Finest education, finest food, finest activities, whatever he wanted. The next 40 years, he spent peacefully tending sheep without a care in the world, just raising a family. And then God came calling. And the final 40 years of Moses' life are going to be filled with trials that no one can imagine. The story will really begin to explode for us next week. We're going to approach the plagues and we're going to approach Easter and those things. And you're going to see how God uses every step of the way to get us here, from here. How God took people from slaves to the Egyptians, to their own sin, to salvation and freedom when they covered themselves with the blood of Christ.